Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Carlo Ammi, and I should explain that he's different to the one that I notified you about this week because of I had a last-minute withdrawal from my guest who should have been on. And since I've been out all day, by the time I got back and found the message that said she couldn't make it, I think I had about an hour and a half or so to get someone else in. And I would have thought that normally would be quite impossible, but perhaps somebody was intuitively saying, try Carlo Ammi. And I sent him an email, and welcome to the program, Carlo.
Thank you very much, Mike.
It's very kind of you to do this at such short notice. We can run one of the old programs, but quite clearly we'd rather have a new one on. So I'm very pleased that you're able to do that. Carlo is making his second appearance on BBS with me, and he's very much into ascension. So perhaps it might be a good thing, Carlo, if you told our listeners how you've become so involved in helping people with the ascension process.
Well, I act by guidance on so much of what I do with what I write and what I like to share with people on my website, and more specifically to the question of ascension as such, the clarity on that really was heightened for me back in September, where I was given a new process to share with people that my guides basically said that this was something that would help people to accelerate the ascension process. And you know, my whole thing has been on simplifying things and finding ways to create inspiration in brief and simple ways, because the human mind tends to complicate everything, and complication oftentimes doesn't serve us, to put it nice and mildly, I guess.
Right. But I mean, what have you done in the previous years leading up to this most important one? I mean, what has your work been?
Well, for the last 14 years, I've sporadically written 4 books and produced an audio CD, all along the lines of helping to make the inner journey more user-friendly, is the way I like to express it. People aren't really taught by our society how to learn simple things like trusting their own self and doing the inner work that's so important to self-understanding and true happiness. We're indoctrinated by our society to look for happiness, wisdom, and truth outside of ourselves. And so for the last 14 years, I've been writing a series of books designed to help people tune into their own inner powers, their own capacities for happiness, calm, and wisdom.
Right. Now, from the books I've read of yours, you're very much into the idea of setting people tasks or even courses. Why is that your preferred way of putting your information out?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the question. Setting people tasks?
Well,
the question.
Well, the last two books I've read of yours, you seem to lay out your books in a way that it's in the manner of a course for people to follow. And I just wondered what prompted you to do it that way. Well, you presumably feel there's some value in the procedure that you give them to follow.
Well, there is a structure to it, specifically, you know, with the Wake Up book, which is the larger volume that takes longer to get through. There are 142 pause sessions, is what I call the short idea sessions that I create for it, to have people create space between briefly stated ideas to go within the self, to feel the wisdom and will of the heart, in tuning into the idea and seeing and feeling how it's a fit. In other words, I'm not looking to present a dogma or anything that I just ask my readers to swallow. I'm asking them to tune into the idea with their heart and see how it fits for them. If it doesn't really fit as stated, whether they want to change one word or the whole thing, the key is find your own truth, tune into it, and then as you get clarity about your truth, pay attention to the lessons that life gives you that will either help you to confirm that truth or to adjust it a little bit. So the structure is particularly important in terms of there's various basic ideas that are important to get. And as you move through the various ideas and find ways to express them in the ways that fit for you, then the unfolding is that much more of an easier process. And it's something that makes sense on a heart level as opposed to, you know, here's a bunch of stuff I just like you to accept and you're going to be happy. I don't take that route. It's like, take these ideas, create some silence between the various segments of the ideas, and let it sit for you to see how those ideas or this particular idea works for you. And I just synthesized all of the various aspects of the Wake Up book into the most recently finished book, along with the process that I was just given in September to help people integrate the ideas in there more effectively. Because really, Michael, what it's all about from my perspective is a reconditioning process. And we get to choose how to do that. There's so many different things in society that act as propaganda to guide us in certain directions that oftentimes are lies. What we can do in the process of reconditioning ourselves is tune into our simple truths that we can pull from within ourselves, and then find ways to repeat these ideas or remind ourselves of them. And it's a very similar kind of tool for conditioning that the propaganda of society steers us, but they steer us in a way that's not too productive.
Right. So what do you feel that people need to be successful in preparing themselves for this process of ascension?
Well, I guess the key to it from my perspective is the question of identity. You know, how am I identifying myself? And once one really begins to integrate the knowing that they're not the body or mind, but they're infinite spirit, then the dominoes tend to fall from there quite easily and fluidly. But we tend to cling to the old egoic ways that don't serve us. And so to answer your question, the two biggest shifts in perspective that I ask people to consider making have to do first with identity, as I mentioned, and secondly, getting clear on a true definitions that resonate on a heart level for the words power and love. Because as Martin Luther King observed back in the 60s, people tend to look at power and love as polar opposites from each other. And it doesn't serve us. I'd like to quote that, and it's something I have at the ready a lot because I love to quote this, and I'd like to quote King directly on what he said. He said, one of the great problems of history is the concepts of love and power have usually been contrasted as opposites, polar opposites, so that love is identified with a resignation of power and power with a denial of love. Power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. And so the world teaches us that power has to do with, you know, how much money you got in your bank account, how cute is your partner, what kind of car you drive, how can you push people around. And that's not really power. It's false power. So one of the basic things that I ask people to consider in my books, Michael, is that to recognize that in terms of how we look at our lives, you know, anything that is truly powerful has love at its basis. And if we really get that at a deep level, then all the doings of our life come out of who we are being. And that's a kind of a tough one for people to get sometimes. The doing comes out of our being, because people people in this life are so concerned right now, lots of folks, about, you know, how am I going to, what am I going to do to get out of this mess I'm in? Because so many people are in overwhelm now. And, you know, what can I do? Well, the question is, what can I be? What can I choose to recognize myself as who I am? And then I can let all my doings come out of that. Does that make sense, Michael?
Yes, sir. And in view of your last comment there, I expect many people wonder why on earth they're here and what the purpose of life is. Now, you said they're probably asking themselves the question, what can I be? Is there something they should be in specifically?
Well, you know, the mind can take that one and run a long way that doesn't go anywhere, unfortunately. It's a question that has to do with choice, from my perspective. It's really choosing to trust that who I am is way beyond just the body or mind. Body and mind, you know, the body is just a vehicle to get me around to learn the lessons I'm here to learn. And the mind is kind of like a GPS for moving around and navigating. What comes to me to express, to more fully answer your question in terms of, you know, what am I here to be? I'm here to recognize who I am as an essential element, the essential element to what I'm here to do and be is to tune in completely to my loving nature, to live and practice and reflect love consistently as possible, all the time. That's what, to me, the choice to ascend really is. Ascension isn't about just floating up into the sky. Ascension is about full and complete realization of my loving nature and the choice to practice that at all times.
Right. Is the ultimate goal to be able to express yourself in terms of unconditional love?
In terms of unconditional love and total presence. And to me, the presence aspect is the one that so many people miss, because present awareness basically precludes fear and anxiety. And right now, we're a world where it seems like fear and anxiety are amped up for masses of people, and they're not willing to be present because present is something that's an unknown. It's kind of like the same thing as saying, you know, trust your the will and wisdom of your heart and feel and think with your heart. And when I throw those ideas out to people, I might as well be asking them if they want to hear me with their nose. You know, it doesn't make sense to them, because we've never been trained how to really trust our inner guidance, our navigation system that's based in the heart, and we've trusted and learned, been indoctrinated, Michael, to trust false guidance systems from the external world that oftentimes tell us big lies.
So are you in effect saying that people should trust their intuition when you speak of inner guidance?
Intuition's a large aspect of it. We tend to want to put labels on things that to make them clearer, and sometimes the labels confuse the issue. So when I say trust the will and wisdom of the heart, that maybe resonates with some people, and other people don't get it at all. We have a strong, strong sense of intuition, but there's just no way to take full advantage of that power unless we trust it. And our society basically teaches us to not trust it. Society says you need a religion to tell you what you should think about God. You need government to hold your hand and tell you what you should do in your home, in your bedroom, and in how you treat other people. There's all kinds of different ways that society wants to tell us, hey, don't trust yourself. And trusting ourselves is a key element of what we're all here to learn how to do.
Yes. So I would imagine that one of the first things people need to do if they aspire to ascend and get to a point where they can practice or try to practice unconditional love, because that's not easy, is to get rid of probably a number of prejudices that they hold. But what would your approach be to that?
Well, you know, it's that's a real open-ended question. I could take that in a whole lot of different directions, Michael.
carry on, then. Yes, carry on.
Yeah, I'll address it best I can. I guess the big thing, you know, when you talk about the different things that need to be addressed in order to really unfold our loving nature, is that we tend to look at the whole process as being something that's extremely difficult, has to be a gigantic mountain to climb. And there's an alternative way of looking at life that the folks that developed NLP or neuro-linguistic programming gave us, that it's really powerful. And that is, instead of sitting there wondering about how terribly difficult something is going to be, is to wonder how easy it can be. And that sets you up for something a whole lot more fluid and graceful than being in fear about how challenging a certain aspect of what's in front of you is or is going to be. So basically, what's in front of us to do is to be with what is, trust what's in front of us, and then, you know, choose to trust what's coming as a teacher. And I guess when we talked about this last May, it was something that came up right near the end of the interview, and it's coming back to me now that we discussed this. When I like to synthesize things down, Michael, as cleanly as I can to help inspire people to tune into it. And the one idea that I offered right near the end of our last interview back last year was that, you know, the idea that everything that happens to you, every thought, every experience, every relationship, all your experience is best viewed as your teacher. And it's a concept that is a major challenge for a lot of people to tune into, because we're not trained to look at life that way. And yet, if we look at everything that occurs to us as an opportunity to respond to it with love, then life becomes a lot simpler process than wondering how difficult it's going to be, or wondering how we can get the upper hand or control the other person, or do something else that's unconscious, but we've been trained to be unconscious by the foolishness of society, let's put it that way.
All right.
Does that make any sense in terms of everything being your teacher and every thought as well?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, thought is an energy, and energy produces action. So, yes, indeed. Now, I know you have your thoughts about the ego, but what place does that have in the future?
What place does the ego have in the future?
Yes.
I believe that ego is going to dissolve for people who make the choice to disassociate from it. And one of the things that's only come to me just since the latter part of last year, I got much clarity on a concept that's quite radical, that I believe is maybe the next step beyond the Occupy movement in terms of where we're going collectively, and addresses your question as well. In terms of ego, it's best released the same way that we release the attachment and connection to corrupt government, silly religion, and other institutions that don't serve us. They're all released in the same way, and that's not through any kind of resistance or fighting, is what I would humbly offer your audience to consider. Fighting and resistance doesn't serve the purpose. It's counter to it. So the thing that I believe we're collectively in the process of learning is that the way we release ego, as well as all the external institutions that seem to mirror our ego, is by removing all attention and support from that which is abusive. So, you know, that's I believe, a major, major next step for us collectively right now.
In that case, if people see things that are wrong in society with the government or whatever, how do you suggest that they make their feelings known so that they may perhaps cause some changes to occur? I mean, like you, I agree that there is no point in having confrontation that leads to abuse or violence. That is negative. But some people don't know any other means of doing it. So what would your answer be to that?
Well, my answer would be that as time progresses and as we collectively nurture the inner powers that we have and learn how to trust the inner, then the time will come for various things, which I can't really get specific about right now, that have to do with disengaging from abusive external institutions. But the key to it, the catalyst to it, is not waiting for the external to change or hoping or wishing for the external things to change, but it is to live and breathe what we ourselves are here to learn and integrate. So rather than waiting for the external world to change or fearing that it's not going to, is A, trusting that all is unfolding in perfection, and focusing my energies on dealing with my own challenges, my own manifestations of ego that I want to that I intend to let go of, as opposed to fretting about how we can beat something that's external. Because if indeed we're all connected, as I believe we are, then there is nothing external. And the change really begins within each of us, and that's where the focus is best placed, as opposed to how am I going to fix something outside of me? Just like it's so much easier when there's internal strife going on to go and find somebody else to fix or save. You know, it's so much easier to go and try to fix the external huge institutions that may appear to be outside of us, rather than going within ourselves and find the peace and solace and the guidance that is to be found there.
Hmm. Well, over a period of time, I have seen a number of channeled messages that effectively ask people to wake up to what is happening around them. They're sort of half asleep, and while they're doing that, their rights and their freedom are being taken away. Now, how do you think people can best respond to that, to let the power and authorities know that they don't like it, or they've had enough, or they want it changed?
You know, people, a lot of folks just laugh at me when I give them this response, and it's my truth, Michael.
Right.
here it is. you know, the in terms of letting the so-called powers that be, the institutions, know that we're not happy with them and that we want something different, doesn't serve any purpose. What does serve a purpose, I believe, is to rather basically, A, deal with one's own inner workings in a responsible, aware way, and B, you know, withdraw attention and support of any kind, and that includes letting them know you're not happy. Remove that attention and support from the offending institutions. I think that in addition to that, and maybe of paramount importance, is that rather than hold on to anger and resentment and overwhelm and fear that we feel about these external institutions, is that we spend some time every day in silence and in sending love to those who are so offensive to us in so many ways, and to not feel it as offense, to simply send loving energy to even the bad guys, the so-called bad guys. And that's very, very foreign to the way most people have been raised.
Yes, well, that's very forward-thinking, and I agree with you entirely, and I'm sure people find it very difficult to love some of the people that are causing all the misery that's taking place. Now, just sort of not moving away from the whole subject, but what do you think actually happens at the time of the ascension process? In other words, when it bites and you have this key point, as I call it, or key event that actually gives you a quantum leap forward where your vibrations or your evolution are concerned. What do you think the process is?
It may be different for everyone, and to answer your question, I believe that what happens then is a mystery that the mind will never understand, and it becomes an exercise in futility at some point to spend too much time wondering about what happens. I think the mind tends to complicate it. The heart knows how to trust. But there's certain things that have been mysteries and will remain mysteries. And for us to try to delineate exactly what happens, I don't know. I can speculate only that we get to a point of ascension, which is a choice. I like to delineate that from enlightenment, which is something that's bestowed. You don't just do a certain number of things and boom, you're enlightened. You practice the loving, ascended way of living for a certain amount of time, and then you are bestowed the sense of enlightenment, and that's permanent. That's forever. Ascension, my sense of it is you can go up and down. You can become ascended, and then you can choose to fall down. But enlightenment is more of a permanent process. And once one fully gets it to an enlightened level, then I believe when the body dies, we get to become what I call optioners. We can make the choice to either come down and help people that can to help them to accelerate their process, or we can stay up in the ethers and where it's a whole lot smoother and simpler and blissful all the time. But once you're enlightened, then it's an ongoing bliss that we can live. So the choice to be of service and come back is an optioner, or to let the enlightened life, when it's over, be the last one on this earth or in a body. I think that's a choice we get to make.
Right. So I guess what you are saying is that where people or where messages say that people should wake up, it is in respect of becoming enlightened, and it's through people like yourself, maybe your sessions, that people can achieve that.
What I have is one set of tools, and there are many paths. What my quest, Michael, has been is to create simple tools that don't take tons of time to get through, and to not ask people to spend inordinate amounts of time every day working on them, to put aside 10 or 15 minutes every day or 6 days a week or whatever it is, and make that a discipline. The challenge with discipline is that so many people look at it as a fighting. The way they look at discipline is forcing themselves to do something. And that's about as counterproductive a way to deal with life as you could possibly have. If discipline is something that you choose to do on a regular basis because you have made the choice to do it as a service to yourself and the world, then it runs very smoothly. But if it's about forcing yourself, then you're just continuing the inner battle. And the inner battle is what we're here to let go of.
Right. Yeah. I notice a reference in your book to what you call, I believe, your trust chapter. And I think one line in there really covers what you've just been talking about, and that is, I trust the process, no matter what the process is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very, very good advice.
Well, another way of saying that some people can resonate with is, you know, if something's happening to me, there's something to learn from it. So if let's say there's something very difficult happening in my life, then if I trust it as a teacher and something that's offering me an opportunity to respond with love, then my outcome is a whole lot different than if I go, oh, there's the universe just kicking my rear end again. And, you know, woe is me. And, you know, life is just really so terrible. So you can look at it one of two ways. I love the way Gary Zukav put it. He said, you know, at all times you're coming from one of two places. You're either coming from a place of love and trust or fear and doubt. So, you know, the trust thing is huge, because until you really have a trust that we're unfolding into a more harmonious society, and sometimes certainly it's by fits and starts, unless you have that trust, then you're kind of like a martyr without a cause, especially when times are challenging. That trust has to be there if you're really going to take the quantum leap into ascension. Trust is the foundation for it.
Right. Now, just on another line of thought here, do you think that religion has anything to do with ascension?
Well, religion becomes such a polluted word in our world, Michael. From my humble perspective, religion as it's currently practiced by about 99% of those who say they're into religion these days is spiritually counterproductive. Because religion basically creates a division between us and God, that we're somehow separate. And religion provokes us to fight with each other over who's God's best. Mm. And the third element that really makes it even that much more destructive in general, as an institution, is that it instills a fear of eternal damnation by those who mess up and don't follow God's rules. So if it's really become an institution not about spiritually nurturing people, that's just a pretense. The vast majority of all religion, certainly all the big ones, are really designed to keep us divided from each other, not aware of our own power, and feeling separate from God and fearful of punishment and feeling guilty about what we do that's oftentimes quite normal.
Hmm. Well, yes, I think I can say I agree entirely with your conclusions there. But some people are so deeply embedded with those beliefs. Can they find a way out of it and actually understand the meaning of ascension, do you think?
Well, and it takes courage to do that. It really does, because we're so indoctrinated to hold on to religious beliefs because we fear that either God will punish us or that our peers will reject us, friends, family that we may go to church with every Saturday or Sunday. Mm. So there's a tremendous social pressure to hold on to the religious beliefs that you practice if you're a regular churchgoer, for example, or a synagogue or temple. It's about peer pressure a lot of times. So it takes courage to basically tune into your own guidance, what your heart would have you do, and then live that truth, as opposed to saying, you know, well, once my parents die, then I'll back out of that religion. But my, you know, it might just kill my dad if he found out I wasn't going to church every Sunday. Okay, so it takes courage to, you know, stand up and say, you know, here's where I'm coming from. Here's what's really working for me.
Yeah. So you've mentioned that we have infinite life. Does part of your beliefs in that respect cover the continuation of life, in as much that we have many lives, or have had many lives upon the earth? In other words, reincarnation.
Oh, yes. I would have no idea how many. Some people think it's hundreds or thousands or even millions. We don't really know. I think we keep coming back until we fully unfold our deep and true loving nature. So we get infinite number of opportunities to realize the insanity of living life from ego or body. And to move beyond the pressures of society, to hold on to cling to the bow of a sinking ship.
Mm. And I think it must be true to say in that event that the difference between most religions and those who believe in reincarnation is perhaps one of the sticking points that makes a difference between them, isn't it? Because I think I'm correct in saying that the big religions, as you've called them, do not believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, they basically tell you got one shot. If you mess up, you're going to fry forever. and if you blow up enough of the other people's religions, then there'll be 70 some virgins waiting to give you sexual favors in the afterlife.
Yes, well,
you know, it's pretty insane.
Well, it is really, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what do you think will be the gains after ascension? I mean, bearing in mind that people are doing their best to work towards a level that they will be prepared, ready for ascension. But what will they gain from that actual jump, that quantum leap into a higher, say, level?
Well, I guess one way to characterize it is true and lasting freedom. And that's the freedom to express who you are and to trust that your present is perfect and that your ongoing nature is one of living, being, and reflecting love. So we have at stake the opportunity to gain all that we could ever really want to gain as soon as we're really ready to take the leap into trusting the inner wisdom and will of the heart. And society is getting over the practice of settling for artificial substitutes for loving power. We've been conditioned to accept false and very temporary alternatives to love. You know, whether it's the pint of ice cream or whether it's a drug or a hit on a cigarette or a six-pack of beer, you know, most people looking for alternatives so they can feel better right now, not really willing to go inside for the bountiful wisdom and happiness and calm that is available if we're willing to go inside. And that's a reconditioning process, Michael, to answer your question. It's not something that's learned overnight. It's learned in small chunks as one gradually makes the firm commitment to live the fully loving life and to do what's within oneself to do in order to create that. And that takes some discipline and it takes practice.
Yes, I have to confess to liking ice cream, I must admit.
And there's nothing wrong with ice cream, and there's no reason to feel guilty about having a little ice cream and using it in moderation. But it's when someone who's not healthy downs a quart of it in one night and three or four nights a week, then it becomes a destructive poison. So we end up mortgaging the long term in order for the short term comfort foods and the liquids that don't really serve us. And I guess that's kind of it in a nutshell for me. There is nothing wrong with the whole variety of different things that have to do with food products that we might not want to consume in great bulk, but that in moderation are fine. We don't want to look for excuses to throw guilt trips on ourselves, and by the same token, we certainly don't want to get into a habit of polluting our bodies on a regular basis.
Hmm. I've read quite a number of channeled messages that refer to the need for people to eat purer and unprocessed foods, etc. Do you think cleansing the body has a great deal to do with preparation for ascension?
Well, I think it can be a wonderful springboard, a building of true power as one nurtures and respects the bodily vehicle. And I've had my challenges in life with a variety of addictions that I've had in the past, and until I let go of those, I had not really the foundation upon which to build a loving life where I'm reflecting love to the world, because I wasn't willing to give it to myself. And so as we feed ourselves addictively things that don't work for us, it's really makes it impossible for us to take the full and complete leap into the ascended life, as long as we're doing things that we know are injurious to the vehicle. That is the body.
Fine. Now, just on a slightly different subject here, you mentioned that you have guides. It might be interesting to know how you make contact and how often. I mean, are they of considerable guidance to you?
You know, I don't have names for them. They come to me, and sometimes I see them in a form that looks like a star that moves, and that star tends to be, you know, behind my closed eyes as well as it's moving sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it will communicate with me in terms of a little language that we kind of worked out, rudimentary, of course, where I ask a question and then if the answer is yes, I will get an up and down vertical movement two or three times up and down to give me a clear yes answer. And likewise, it will go horizontally back and forth if the answer is no. So
right.
I get guidance that way sometimes, and I do see what I call star dots quite frequently. Almost every night that I go, when I'm outside in the night sky, I'll see them. And usually just one at a time. Other times, just inspiration in nature that comes to me without any kind of visual thing happening at all, where something will come to me, especially if I'm out in nature somewhere and it's a beautiful day. That's when I get chunks of books and articles that come to me that inspire me to transcribe them so I don't forget.
Do you ever see orbs?
Orbs as such with the naked eye, no. Some people think of the star dots as orbs, but I've photographed orbs many times, things that will come out in a digital photograph that are not seen by the naked eye. I got some tremendous ones at what they call the hot ponds in Hawaii, where the ocean meets a pond of fresh water. I basically aim my camera into the area where the two come together, and these beautiful white orbs, dozens of them, with wonderful little fractal patterns in them, showed up in that picture. And I've taken others out in the desert, at one of my favorite places to go in the desert, where very crisp and clean ones come through, and you can actually see cactus behind one of the orbs where it comes out. So it's kind of translucent as such, but very colorful at the same time. Lots of aquas and kind of off-reds and white.
Right, yes. I've seen lots of photographs of them. They're quite fascinating. Do you think that all people could develop some sort of contact or relationship with their guides?
Old people?
Anybody.
People. I want to understand the question.
Well, I'm assuming that if you have guides and I can recognize contact with mine, that every person does have them.
Yes.
Do you think they could all make some sort of contact and develop it if they decide to do so?
Here's how I want to answer that. it really depends on the extent to which one is willing to be open to the possibility, and then to trust that the guidance is there for one to tap. Because I believe that guidance is readily available to us, but if we don't believe in it, if we think that such stories of external guidance are just a bunch of myth or fiction, then it's much more difficult to make that connection if we're not open to it. And once the openness comes, then some trust, the openness to really trust that you can be guided and to hush up and listen. That's the big challenge for everybody is how can we create some empty space, some silence and quiet for spirit to speak? Because the mind tends to want to be so busy throwing thoughts and ideas at us and such that that we create very little time for emptiness. And emptiness is the key to everything from my humble perspective, friend.
Now, we've got at least about 5 minutes left. Is there any aspect of your sessions, your courses, or your books that we haven't touched upon that you would like to mention?
I would. The practice that came to me that is the centerpiece of the Shifting Process ebook is one that's similar to one that came out in a bestseller a couple of years ago, I believe it was, in which energy is directed from the hands into four different areas of the head and neck. And what the practice that came to me was in the course of directing this energy from your fingertips, and putting your fingers together and directing it into the head and neck, to combine that directing with what I call a power statement. Some people use the term affirmations. I think that's become a kind of polluted word because it means, for a lot of people, it means saying stuff I don't really believe. But power statements that I was given to incorporate into the practice. That are said for a period of 11 minutes, three times a day, as you direct the energy into your head and neck, can help you to integrate or recondition yourself to fully appreciate and practice your inner power. So that's something that I was guided to share with people back in September, and the book was completed by right before 11/11. So, it came together very cleanly, and that's the book that for people that feel like they've been on the edge of making the leap to what I call the ascended way of living. This is what I would suggest that they take a clear look at. And yet, for some people, they're going to say, wow, that sounds very simple. All I have to do is this little practice three times a day for 11 minutes each time I do it for about 9 weeks. And this guy's telling me that I'm going to make a major leap. And the answer is, well, yes, I'm telling you that. I'm suggesting that very directly. And, the mind might say, well, that sounds easy enough. But the ego will definitely throw resistance in your path when it comes to committing to do an 11-minute practice three times a day. The ego will look for every excuse in the world to avoid doing it.
Yes. Now, Carlo, I would like to give you a minute or two to mention your books, which I believe are e-books, where they're available from. You might like to give out your website address as well.
Please, thank you. The website is yourpausebutton.com. Yourpausebutton.com. And I do have over 70 videos that are all short videos that are free on the website that are designed to help inspire you and help clarify you what you're doing on your inner journey in a way that makes it all a smoother path for you. The books that I've created are a series of books. The first one it was called All That Matters, and it's kind of an overview of spirituality with lots of quotes from masters and lots of short, brief ideas incorporated into it. It's for people that are relatively new to the spiritual path. The Wake Up book is the larger volume, and it's got the 142 pause sessions in it where there are breaks suggested for your going into the silence with ideas to tune into your own inner wisdom. The Shifting Process ebook is all about a path that people can choose to take if they feel like they've been right on the edge of taking a major spiritual leap and they're looking to create a simple discipline to help move them through it more effectively. And the last book is called What to Do When It Hits the Fan. And it's spiritual crisis management, simple things that you can do to cope more effectively when there are crisis situations, when there's overwhelm or big challenge in your life. There are a collection of simple practices that I've collected and used and appreciated probably over the last 20 years plus since I started collecting these ideas, and I synthesized all the best ones that have been most effective, and they come from a variety of disciplines that I have found very effective, including body talk, if you're familiar with the concept, body talk, and educational kinesiology. So, it's a simple set of ideas that is in one simple 38-page ebook. So I'd invite people to go to yourpausebutton.com and check out the free resources. I do have a free audio and text pause sessions on the website as well, so people can get a flavor for what a pause session really is, Michael.
It's great. I shouldn't think there are many people that have a website that have something like 70 videos available for free. Anyway, we're reaching the last few minutes of the program, so I have to thank you immensely for coming on and rescuing me at such short notice. And it's been a very good interview, or a good chat, I would say, with yourself.
I enjoyed it, Michael. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you're welcome. I love the work you do. I think I said to you, in its own way, I feel that you're quite unique in the way you approach it. So, and you're very well informed. So it's been a very interesting program with you. So thanks again, Carlo. I appreciate it immensely. And I wish you every success with your e-books and the shifting process, I think you call it.
Yes. Thank you so much, Michael.
You're welcome. Thank you, Carlo. Right, friends, that was very good. I enjoyed that. Next week, my guest will be Josephine Sellers, and we will discuss her new book called Parallel Worlds. It's about her life and moves from different locations and her contacts with entities that she's met along the way. And I can tell you, having read her book, she's had a very, very interesting life, and it's well worth listening to. So thank you, my friends, for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.